Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate. Thank you for tuning in to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. My guest today is Cam Deamer. Cam serves as Dr. First President and brings more than 20 years of healthcare experience to this position. He first joined Dr. First in 2004. Dr. First is an organization that was founded in the year 2000 and has really been a pioneer in healthcare technology solutions and consulting services. You can find out more about Dr. First at their website, drfirst.com. That's drfirst.com. So, Cam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's really a pleasure to speak with you again. I think the last time we talked was when HIMSS used to still be a thing.
That's exactly right. We had a great conversation. But first, let's take a step back, Cam. And for those few people who may not be familiar with Dr. First, tell us a bit about the company's work in the health IT space.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And also, I got to make a slight correction. I think you said I was with the company since 2014. I've actually been with Dr. First since 2004. So I'm about 17 years in right now. It's been a great experience. So for people who don't know us very well, for the last about 21 years, the company was founded January 1, 2000. We've been really focused hard on medication management, really from the point that a patient encounter occurs all the way through to monitoring the outcomes after the patient receives their drug therapy. So that can mean anything from providing sophisticated e-prescribing technology platforms, EHRs, or connecting like healthcare stakeholders to providers and patients with, you know, just-in-time information. We create collaboration tools to tie people together who are working with patients on drug therapies. We work on patient compliance, and always we're working to remove inefficiencies from the workflows that take place around that triangle of care. And if you can just give me a second to talk about that.
Sure.
For us, the triangle of care is like you picture a physician or, you know, a provider at the apex of the triangle. Until a provider takes action, nothing really happens. You know, they have to diagnose a problem, prescribe a drug, admit someone to a hospital, and then like the healthcare space springs into action. At the other two corners of the triangle, you've got pharmacy at one and hospital at the other. And in the center is the patient. So those four entities, provider, pharmacy, hospital, and patient, they work very closely together trying to keep that patient healthy. And we've just, like I said, we spent the last 21 years really working on how medication management flows through that triangle.
Well, you mentioned one thing there, Cam, at the very beginning about medication management. And I just want to touch on that, and then maybe we'll get back into it a little later. But medication management can be complex. Proper medication management is such things as medication reconciliation to make sure that all providers know the medication as patients are taking. We need to know if there is patient compliance. Are they filling the prescriptions? And medication adherence, are they taking the medications as prescribed? So the whole issue of medication management is more than just sending a prescription from point A to point B, no doubt about that.
Yeah, the way we look at medication management, we've always ascribed to what's called the e-medication management model, which has four stages. So you have an assessment and reconciliation piece that happens first, which is what you were talking about with MedRec. You know, what drugs is the patient on? Who are they being treated by? What's their diagnosis? You know, what are other people doing with them? Then you move into the prescribing phase, which is where e-prescribing comes in with all the information it brings to the process. Once a prescribing decision is made, you move to dispensing. And how does the patient obtain their drug? Do they obtain their drug? Can they afford their drug? You know, is it convenient for them to pick up? And then finally, monitoring. So what happened next? After the patient left the practice, they left the pharmacy, did they take the drug? Did the drug create a side effect so they quit taking it? Or did they have a good outcome for their therapy? So yeah, we've got our eye on all four of those sectors to make sure that we cover the med management space very completely.
And beyond just those direct attributes, something else that certainly can affect it is knowing what medications patients' insurance may cover, where they are in the formulary status.
So absolutely.
That's certainly important, no doubt about that.
Well, yeah, an example of that is we were early pioneers in the space of real-time benefit check, working with our partner Humana. And since then, you know, that's become something that's quite common in the e-prescribing space. But the problem from the very early days of e-prescribing was, in order to handle the e-prescribing process inside an EHR or an e-prescribing system, the payers and PBMs would provide files that describe the formulary and the drug status. And I've been told over and over by EHR vendors that they view the files as only about 50% accurate, because so much of adjudication is hard-coded into PBM systems. And since that hard code can't be represented accurately, you end up with more like an approximation of the drug cost or the formulary status. So working on real-time benefit check was something where we were able to send a patient's eligibility information to the PBM. They would run it just like if it was a pharmacy claim, and you get back to exact information on cost and status, not just an approximation. So it led to improvements in not only transparency for the physician and the patient around price, but also to maybe surprisingly improvements in the electronic prior auth process. Because the data files that were provided before would indicate many drugs having prior auth required, but in real life, they may not. That may be hard-coded around, or the drug may have been prior authed already and now it no longer needs prior auth. So instead of running around doing a bunch of unnecessary prior auth, you know, processes, real-time benefit check lets us know, yeah, that one no longer requires a prior auth, and saves a lot of time from that perspective as well.
Yeah, that's a great benefit. And certainly in a lot of clinical practices, that's always been one of the pain points, was that real-time benefit checking. Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I've known of Dr. First for quite a few number of years, very familiar with your work in the e-prescribing place. But I recently saw that Dr. First has changed their tagline to Unite the Healthiverse. What is the Healthiverse, and what are you doing to unite it?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Thanks for asking that. So yeah, a lot of people know us from our early days when we were just really heavily focused on e-prescribing. I know you were around, you know, for the growth of e-prescribing, Jim, and you remember how hard that was. I mean, I would sum up, you know, the early years is just absolutely terrible. We could not get a doctor to buy e-prescribing for anything. You know, they just didn't see a need to change from their pencil and paper, their pen and paper. But it really wasn't until we got the payers involved and started selling e-prescribing licenses to payers, and then, you know, distributing it at no cost to physicians, that we started getting any traction at all. And then later, you know, government programs, initiatives, regulations really started to turn that around. But it was very hard without the broader involvement of the healthcare stakeholders. So what Unite the Healthiverse really means is we've come to a point as a company where we're very concerned about everybody who has a stake in the patient's care and the patient's drug therapy. So the healthyverse to us is that big cloud of stakeholders that surround the triangle of care, and it's huge. I mean, I don't think patients have any idea how many, you know, business entities and individuals have a deep concern about their outcomes on therapy. So, I mean, you know, your doctor does, but what about, you know, there's an insurance company, there's pharma manufacturers who care that you take the drugs you're prescribed. There's PBMs, you know, who are making their business from managing, you know, the claims around your care. There are employers who care about, you know, their workforce productivity, making sure people stay healthy. There's lab companies. I mean, you just walk around the healthcare space and there are so many stakeholders who all care very much what happens in that triangle of care. And to us, that's the healthyverse. Everybody in that healthyverse has needs related to information, but they also have a desire to make information available to other people in the healthyverse when they need it. You know, there's no reason that an insurer would not want a physician to know, you know, quality information related to a patient, something that the physician could look at while they're with the patient in order to, you know, produce the outcome that the insurer wants to see. So we're trying now to turn our attention to interoperability and breaking down those information silos, making sure people can give the information they want to give and can receive the information they need to receive just in time to take care of patient needs. So unite the healthyverse. We're trying to bring it all together now and make sure that it all flows very smoothly.
Cam, you mentioned the holy grail of interoperability there. In another lifetime, I worked at a large specialty practice, pulmonary practice. When patients would be referred to us, they'd come and they would be shocked that we didn't have all their records, because it was almost like they thought healthcare was like the banking system where everybody knows everything and things are very liquid in terms of data. But the whole idea of interoperability, that's a giant topic. Where are you seeing problems that Dr. Furse is addressing?
So I really like the way that HIMSS is defining operability or interoperability today. They talk about it in like three main levels. They talk about foundational interoperability, structural, and semantic. And federal incentive programs have been chipping away at making progress in these areas for years, as well as a number of private industry efforts. And they've been a mixed bag of success. So if you think about, you know, what these levels mean, foundational interoperability means that you're able to exchange data with somebody. And this was fixed quite a while ago through things like the direct, you know, all capital letters, direct email standard. I can send you any kind of file that I want to send you, any piece of data I want to send you, and you can receive it as long as we both use the direct standard. We may not be able to use it, or we may have to go through a lot of manual hoops, but we can at least get a piece of data from me to you. So I feel like that's done, and there's no real reason for us to focus on that. From a structural interoperability perspective, for us, that means, you know, primarily drug data, since we work in the medication space. And structural interoperability means that, you know, if you send me data, you send it to me in fields. I understand what those fields are, what they mean. I understand the contents of those fields. So I can properly interpret that you sent me a drug code, or you sent me a day's supply, or you sent me a quantity. This structural interoperability was solved in pharmacy like nearly 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. Pharmacy was way on the leading edge of solving structural interoperability and has continued to refine it all these years, largely because they had to submit claims to payers. So they needed a common ability to exchange this information electronically. And it's largely solved today among EHRs because of central switching networks like SureScripts or the ERX network, where the fields are all standardized. They, you know, they follow NCPDP standards, and there's general industry agreement that we'll all exchange data in the proper fields. So from a structural interoperability perspective, it's done. Semantic is the problem, the final step. This is, I keep telling people, this is the dirty little secret of medication management. Just because your EHR knows the definition of a data field doesn't mean it can actually accurately and meaningfully use the content of that field. So that's where we're playing. We're laying the path for true semantic interoperability, particularly around patient medication histories, because of the unique problems associated with that. Medication history is curated by many, many sources. And when you try to bring that all together, creating semantic operability remains a real problem.
You know, one thing, Cam, that I'm aware of is that some of these foundational interoperability standards or processes that you mentioned that hospital or other type of provider can create a file with standards such as a CCDA file or something like that and export it. Another provider can import it into their database. Kind of some common standards there, but under the most recent certification standards, there is the requirement that there be APIs so a third party authorized by a patient can actually go into a provider's database and pull out those patients' records, a portion or all their records. So that seems like that's going to solve some of the permissions that were required on the back end for somebody to send something. That's no longer required. If a third party has permissions from a patient, they can come and get what they need for that patient. I think that's a big step. Whether that actually we'll see that be used very much, I guess time will tell.
Yeah, in my mind, Jim, that's still addressing structural interoperability. Mm-hmm. I can grab the things from you that I'm interested in. But when you use medication as an example, which I think is a great example, actually, because there's so much, you know, the perception is that there's complete standardization in the medication space and that there are really no problems with semantic interoperability. And yet the whole medication management space is crawling with semantic interoperability problems. But let me give you an example of you know, why like reaching into somebody else's data to pull it out really wouldn't solve those issues. Take it that you're a hospital and you're admitting a patient. You need, you know, the first step as soon as the patient gets there is you want to compile an accurate meds list. You want to know what they're taking now as an ambulatory patient. And then you want to, you know, reconcile that to whatever you're going to administer while they're in the hospital. And as they move through, you've got to reconcile it over and over. And then when they leave the hospital, you've got to reconcile it one more time as they're discharged back out into the ambulatory space. So this compiling a list is the first step of the med rec process. And it's where you really need that complete interoperability so that you can not only understand what data you have, but you can actually use the data and interpret it properly. So what you're looking for in a good med list is three C's. You want it to be complete, clean, and consumable. And you actually already touched on this a little bit in terms of completeness. You know, just do you have all the records? Like you're admitting Cam Deemer. Do you have all of Cam Deemer's medical records? Are you picking them up from enough different sources that you fill all the gaps? There is an industry standard feed that anyone can pick up from SureScript, and it's pretty good. You know, it covers a lot of the records that most people would have, but it doesn't cover all the records, and it doesn't cover everybody. There are still significant gaps. So, you know, to make it complete, you might need to go to local pharmacies, for instance, and bring their data in, because frequently those small local independent pharmacies are not contributing to the industry standard feed. So that's an area where like the fire standard might really help if all the pharmacy vendors adopt that, to be able, you know, a hospital to be able to reach out to a specific pharmacy and pull back records would be great in terms of handling completeness. But then it needs to be clean. Cognitive overload as you're looking at a list like that's a real problem. And a history feed that's full of duplicates and inconsistent information is a real safety and productivity problem. Because remember, you're getting this from multiple sources when you pick up the industry feed. So the feed, I mean, entry stakes, right, is deduping it. You've got to dedupe it, but you've also got to present it in a user-friendly way that eliminates confusion, but preserves the information you need when you're going through the list. So you got to organize it properly so the user can, just like adherence information, you want to be able to see for that drug, how many times was it filled and were there any gaps? So what was the therapy progression like through time? So that you can make, you know, correct judgments as you're admitting the patient. But the real trick is consumable. You've been around EHRs long enough. I don't know if you work in the acute care space much. They have some special problems here. But EHRs in general choke on information that they can't interpret properly, which means they either have to import it as free text, you know, like just a blob of free text, or a human's got to get involved. They've got to transcribe and then manually enter the information, which unfortunately is the leading source of, you know, adverse drug events and medication errors on admission. You really don't want people retyping information if you can avoid it. So there's a number of problems that lead to that information being non-consumable. So this is going back to that thing about, look, I can pull it out of your system, but can I use it after I pull it out? So here's a few of the things that can happen. Especially when you use the industry standard feed, the data often has no SIG, no patient instructions. That's because payers contribute a lot of the data. They contribute claims data. So they give you the drug and the day's supply, things like that, but they won't give you a SIG. It's just empty. When a SIG is available, it's almost always free text instead of being codified fields. So again, what's an EHR going to do with free text? They can stick it in a free text field, but then it can't use it for drug edits and things. Whenever you look at a drug code, an NDC code, coming in from the ambulatory environment, it's going to be derived from all different drug compendia, you know, with First Data Bank, Medispan, Multum, all the different drug compendias that are available or used by somebody. And there's no adequate crosswalks. So you would think an NDC is an NDC, but it's not really. There are obsolete NDCs. There are NDCs that are reused. There are mismatches often in the data between the NDC code and the drug name. And there are issues with how the facility uses its own drug database. Is it updating it at the same frequency that the systems have been updated that are contributing data? So in other words, if my e-prescribing system updates daily and your hospital system updates monthly, we have another source of confusion when we run into NDCs and we don't both interpret the same way. Hospitals often don't import the whole set of drugs from the database. The ambulatory environment uses a much richer set of NDCs than the hospital does. So you can run into problems there where the drugs records just don't exist in the hospital. And hospitals also make a lot of custom edits to their drug records that everybody in the hospital knows that's what you type when you're going to use that drug, but it may not match at all what's coming in from outside. So you just get mismatches with NDCs, which kick out errors, and somebody's got to get involved. Just the last thing real quick is terminology. Every hospital has their own way of, you know, using terminology. When they put a SIG together, maybe they want to say tab, maybe they want to say tablet, maybe they just want a T in there. You know, everybody does it different, and the chances of getting what you want on the incoming record is virtually zero. So in order to drive all the human and electronic processes inside the hospital, you got to really sync up the nomenclature. You're going to use abbreviations or full text. You're going to use Latin or English. You know, what words do you want to use for which things? So to get real semantic interoperability, you've got to do more than grab data from people. You got to close these other kinds of gaps as well.
You know, I've got a long list of questions here, Cam, but we only have about another minute and a half. So here's kind of a curveball question. One of the problems it seems like we have is there's no such thing that we have for a national patient identifier. Everybody has a social security number, but I believe there's federal legislation saying that cannot be used as your medical record number. or medical identifier. Are we ever going to be able to get a national patient identifier?
Well, since you threw me a curveball, I'll maybe throw you a curveball back.
Good.
We actually have obtained a series of patents on some blockchain related, like patient identifier processes. So over the next couple years, we plan to develop our ideas out around that to try to create a very practical grassroots way for, you know, providers and hospitals, pharmacists, patients to all work together to create meaningful identifiers that just work, you know, without having a big top down push by the Fed or anybody. So I'm going to say yes, eventually, where it comes from us.
You know, that's exciting. Everybody's spent a lot of work on that over the years, and it's something that needs to be done. And we're just going to have to do another one of these sessions together sometime, Cam, sooner rather than later, because I'm very fascinated in blockchain being used for healthcare. And we didn't even really have a chance to talk about machine learning or artificial intelligence, which I know is very involved in the whole moving forward in healthcare data and delivery.
Yeah, I'd love to follow up and we can go a little deeper on that.
Yeah. To our audience, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Take Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest today, Cam Deamer of Dr. First. Cam, thanks for coming aboard today.
Thank you very much, Jim. It was great to talk to you again.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.